Bentley Brewer has been approved for Pro Wrestling Fans by the creators of the Angle Podcast.
Welcome back, everyone, to a brand new edition of the Angle Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Joey Carney, and today's guest I specifically invited on to discuss the topic of podcasting, well, because I believe he's the best that there is today. He's an Emmy Award-winning sportscaster, podcaster, member of the Ads Free Shows team. He's not just living the gimmick, he is living the dream. He is John Alba. Welcome to the show, and it's a pleasure to have you on.
That's very kind, Joey, all those words and nice little living the gimmick pun. That was good stuff there. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. How are you today, man?
I'm great. It's another great day to be a pro wrestling fan. That's what I like to say.
Always is.
So to start things off here, you have the opportunity to talk or to work with a lot of the greats, you know, currently Matt Hardy, Eric Bischoff, even the wives of wrestling. Do you sometimes have to pinch yourself? There you go. You sometimes like have to pinch yourself and to fully like appreciate what you're able to do with your career.
You know, I try to remind myself through the good days and the bad that I am getting to do really cool things. And little 5-year-old me who loved wrestling, he loved the Hardy Boys, he loved Kurt Angle, he loved Eric Bischoff. Yeah, it's pretty cool. There's no doubting that. But at the same time, it's kind of just my career. And I understand that a lot of people may not make that correlation. But while it is something very cool that I get to do, it is a job at the end of the day. Yeah. And I do my best that I can at my job. And I try to make the people that I work with look good and come off as great as they can on their respective shows and programs. And I try to keep it in perspective because, you know, just like any job, there's good days, there's bad days, there's tough things to overcome, personality management, all that. And just because it's a certain specific sector of work, I think sometimes people tend to forget that.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I mean, it's definitely a very cool path that I've been fortunate to have. And, you know, every day it's just trying to keep it fresh and do something new.
Yeah. And I like to think like the work ethic comes from the experiences that you've had, you know, traveling around the country, things like that. And I know that you kind of transitioned from New Jersey to Florida. And I actually did the same. I was born in New Jersey and then moved to South Florida. And I know that, you know, doing so that really shaped me and my mindset. So what does it have done to you, being that you've done something similar, being in New Jersey and up the East Coast?
Yeah, I think, and this is kind of general advice, forget even career stuff, but more life advice. The more different kinds of lifestyles that you can experience, the more cultured you will become. My first on-air job was at the ABC Fox affiliate in Bangor, Maine. TV market 156 out of 210. Living in a town with a small population covering schools, high school sports, with schools with total enrollment of 100 plus kids, if that. So going from growing up in suburbia to that, then going down to Orlando, which is a metropolis, to coming back to Jersey, I went to school in New England too. So like I've experienced a lot of different walks of life, even just from up and down the East Coast. So I highly recommend that to anybody. If you get the opportunity, don't be afraid to move outside of your comfort zone. There are going to be some people who want to be lifers wherever they live, and that's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think experiencing the most diversity you can really sets yourself up for success down the line.
Yeah. I like I said, I grew up in New Jersey. Moved to Florida.
Where in Jersey?
I would say like it's Bergen County.
Bergen County. I was born in Bergen County.
Oh, very nice.
Yes.
Yeah, and I moved to South Florida from there when I was like 10 or 11. And over the last three or four years ago, I actually moved back to Jersey. So I'm living in Jersey now here. And oh, nice. I'm looking actually to move to Orlando next year. So it's kind of a back and forth. So I completely get what you're saying, where different styles of schooling, but not even that, just an environment in general. That's why I asked, you know, about the mindset, things like that, because
it just shapes your outlook on life.
Yeah.
It shapes the way you talk to people and you communicate with people. And for me, I think our society lacks a lot on the large scale, on the macro scale, the ability for people to put themselves in other people's shoes sometimes because they've never interacted with other people that are different from them. Yep. So when you do experience that, I think it's easier to understand where people come from, be it their views on society, politically, sports, pro wrestling, whatever it may be.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, living in Orlando, have you ever run into other wrestlers or superstars that you've never had the chance to meet yet?
Yeah. When I lived in Orlando, I ran into a lot of people that were inside the wrestling industry frequently. I think I ran into Alexa Bliss like three different times and they were all at like Walmart. Yeah. It was like very weird. It was very bizarre.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's just such a huge hub for wrestling. And as I got more into working in wrestling on a more full-time basis, you start to become friendly with people, you know, especially people you meet along the indies that are working in the NXT system, or maybe they were in AEW, whatever it may have been. So yeah, I did find myself quite a bit when I was in Orlando running into people that were involved in pro wrestling in one way or another.
Yeah. I remember one time when I was actually visiting my sister, I think at the beginning of the pandemic, she was living in Orlando, and I walk into a Publix and right past me walks EC3, headphones in and everything.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I'm like,
he was probably loading up on protein powder. Yeah. That sounds about right. Yeah.
Walking past the deli in Publix. Yeah, from there, we just, you know, I was able to talk to him. And
how many bangs did he have with him?
That, I don't think he had any, to be honest with you. He had his shades on, he had his headphones in, and he was like on a mission to get to, you know, the deli section in Publix.
But, I'm just giving EC3 some crap. EC3, actually, we taped an episode of the Hardy podcast that hasn't been released yet. We taped it about a month and a half ago with EC3, a live interview with him where he and Matt watched back their big title blow off match, which was pretty cool. So
that's awesome.
That was fun.
So I like to think that, you know, the phrase work ethic really is a great way to describe you, because the things you've been able to do in your career thus far, it's such a high level, you know, coming from sports, you know, broadcasting, all over what you're doing now with the podcasting. What does having a great work ethic mean to you, and how have you been able to establish yours?
Well, I appreciate that. I think work ethic, part of it is you either have it or you don't, right? Like, you're just kind of born with it or you're not.
Yep.
And you can learn how to establish a more healthy work ethic over time, but there has to be some of that born and bred into you.
Yeah.
I am one of the fortunate or misfortunate few that knew exactly what they wanted to do when they were 5 years old. So the positive of that is you can really put a lot of time and energy into trying to set yourself up to make sure that you get there. The negative of that is that you spend a lot of time and energy trying to put yourself in a position to get there.
Yep.
And I used to subscribe to that whole like gotta grind mentality. But I think that's a really unhealthy mentality to have. Yeah. I think finding a degree, because I understand in a lot of situations, you're never going to find complete work-life balance, but as long as you can find a degree of work-life balance, that's really critical. And that's something that took me a long time to really learn. I'm still kind of learning it. But I think if you can establish that and commit yourself to doing the very best that you can at your work, and most importantly, doing it right, doing it the right way.
Yeah.
If you can do all that, I think you're doing the best thing you can for yourself as far as work ethic is concerned.
Yeah. And you said that you found, you know, at such a young age, what you wanted to do, you know, as for a career. What was that specifically? Because I know for me, it was writing at first and then going to journalism and kind of just trickled over to being on camera and different things like that. So what was your process as to, you know, being a kid to now?
That team right up there, right there, that Pride and Power poster. That's the 1998 New York Yankees. I was watching their 98 home opener against the Oakland Athletics with my mom on TV. It was on Fox 5 New York. And it was a 17-13 final, which if anyone's a sports fan, you know, a baseball game being 17-13 is very abnormal. There were a lot of runs scored and it was just bang, bang, bang. And I remember turning to her and saying, that's what I want to do for a living. I want to talk about that. I want to be the guy that talks about that. And I was five, something like that. Yes. So I think that Big Bang moment was kind of that. And I knew I wanted to have a career in sports broadcasting of some sort. I didn't know my exact path until really college, I'd say. Maybe end of freshman year of college is where I was like, okay, I'm going to be a TV guy.
Yeah.
I was fooling around with different entities, play-by-play, writing, blogging, all that kind of stuff. So sports talk radio. But TV ended up being the route that kind of got ingrained in me.
Yeah. And when did that transition over to wrestling? Well, being, you know, a fan of wrestling as a kid, did you ever have that idea what maybe that could be something in the future?
I think it was always something in the back of my head. They're like, oh, that'd be really cool. But working in wrestling at this capacity didn't really come into the rearview mirror until probably about 2020. I mean, I'd been doing work in wrestling. I'd had my Living the Gimmick podcast for a long time. I had been doing a lot of writing over the years, but
yeah,
you know, when you're so indoctrinated into the TV news life, that's your priority. And I was covering cool things. I was covering the NFL playoffs, the NBA playoffs, Daytona 500, yeah, all these very cool things. I was very fortunate to get to do, but it was really the pandemic and just kind of being in the right place at the right time in Orlando where everything was going down. And I think what I had to offer was a real sports journalist background of how can I cover a very serious thing about a world that is not serious at all? How can I provide coverage that is of substance? So yeah, that's, and I was the only one tackling that because there were no other sports journalists in the area that gave a crap about pro wrestling.
Yeah.
So yeah, it allowed me to kind of burrow out my own beat.
Yeah. And, you know, looking at, you know, doing the research on you and looking at your videos, you present such a, like a cool, calm, collected attitude on camera. You look very comfortable speaking on camera. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily realize that that is a big part of, you know, podcasting, but also just being on TV in general is being, having that comfortability. Have you ever had that sense of like stage fright sort of say, or like being nervous going on, you know, to anything on camera?
Yeah. So, and that's a great question. And I appreciate that more than you even know, because that is something I do take a lot of pride in.
Yeah.
That I feel like when you're watching me on camera, I don't think that you feel like you're watching a broadcaster. I think the, or at least what I try to emote is that how I'm talking to you right now is no different than how you and I would be having conversation if you were right here next to me. So if I can give that off in my stature, in my demeanor to the camera, then that means I'm doing my job. You know, I try to look when that red light or green light, whatever light it is, goes on. That's me talking to one person.
Yeah.
And there may be 10 people watching me. There may be 300 people watching me. There may be 3,000.
No.
There may be more than that. But it's me and that one person in that living room, in their bedroom, in wherever they're consuming, on the train, wherever they're consuming my content. That's kind of my approach. And that takes a lot of time to really do well. My first day on air on live TV, I was definitely nervous.
Yeah.
But after that, it kind of melted away and you find your style over time. I would say I did not become what I would consider to be a great broadcaster until about probably 4.5 years in. I think it really takes time. It takes reps and it takes being in the right position and the right place at the right time. And for me, that moment was at the 2020 Daytona 500, where Ryan Newman on the last lap was involved in a really bad crash. And that night I was live like 11 times. I was all over the country. I had a video go super viral. It had like 9-10 million views of the crash because I just happened to be filming it on my phone.
Yeah.
And a lot of times with live shots, I'm sorry that I'm rambling here, but a lot of times with live shots in TV, some reporters will like to script out everything. Some will script out an intro, script out an outro. And I used to do a lot of trying to memorize, but I'm not an actor, right? So that night I just said to myself, to the anchor, I said to the anchors, they're like, what do you want me to ask you? And I said, ask me whatever you want. And I'm just going to tell you what happened. And I'm going to tell you how I feel and how everyone around me felt.
Yep.
And it was the night that it just kind of clicked for me. It was the only time in my tenure at that particular place of employment that I ever got a good job from my boss, because it was, it felt very real. It felt very human. And that's the night that I was like, okay, this is the approach good broadcasters take.
Yeah. And I'm always asked too about, you know, fans who listen to my show, what, you know, how do you prepare to be on screen or be on camera? Is there, you know, a nervousness that goes into that? And honestly, my biggest thing I tell them is, if you are knowledgeable in what you're trying to portray, say if it's pro wrestling or any other sport, if you are knowledgeable and you know what you're going to talk about, there really is nothing to be nervous about, because you're not making up things. You're not, you know, you're just presenting what you know.
Are you a sports fan, like a traditional sports fan?
No, not necessarily. No. My sport is pro wrestling.
So my mentor in TV and broadcasting is Ian Eagle, who is one of the top play-by-play guys in the world. Brooklyn Nets play-by-play guy, voice of the NBA on TNT and Turner, the NFL on CBS. And from day one that I met him 12 years ago. The first lesson he taught me is the single most important lesson I ever learned as far as broadcasting is concerned, is that pre-production is production. All the work you put in beforehand is how your broadcast is going to go. So if you prepare yourself, you're going to be dandy. Yep. But if you're not prepared, you're going to get exposed.
It's a big part of it. It's the biggest part of it, I think.
The biggest.
Yeah. You have such a resume with the shows that you're able to do. It's time consuming. There's a lot of things that go into it. What goes into planning these different shows? Because they're all different. They're all different concepts, whatnot. How do you mentally prepare, or, you know, change hats, sort of say, when you're doing, you know, a show with Matt Hardy, or you're doing The Wives of Wrestling, or if you're doing just in general a podcast?
Yeah, I was counting the other day, and I think between all of my shows, now keep in mind, not all my shows are weekly. Some of them are monthly or bi-weekly or special premium events. But I think between all of them, I think by the end of next month, I will be up to 11.
Wow.
Which is literally insane.
Yeah.
But I think that the first part of it comes from personality management, like I was referring to. You have to really get to know the people that you're working with and understand their workflow, because their workflow may be very different from yours. And 99% of the time they are. So once you figure that out, that's how you then go about trying to prepare appropriately for each show. For the Matt Hardy show, for example, a lot of the other shows on our network and Conrad's podcast and all that stuff, they have researchers do the pre-production notes.
Yeah.
I do all the research and pre-production for Matt's show. That is entirely me. I do 8 to 9 to 10 to 11 pages of prep work for every show that I do with him. Unless it's like an Ask Matt Anything episode where we just take questions, but
So,
And the thing is, maybe half of that gets used on the show, maybe half of it. And I'm not pre-preparing questions. It's just having that ready to go. So with him, that's kind of our workflow. And Matt is just the best dude ever. And he's so, hey, what can I do to make this work for you? He knows that I'll do whatever I can for him. with the wives, their personality types are so different.
Yes.
So different. They're different from each other. So yeah. I know that any given day I could be on the phone five times with Giovanna Engel and we're just talking and just shooting the breeze about life. And then we go up there and we're like, okay, this is what we're going to talk about. So it's a totally different degree of preparation. With Eric Bischoff with Strictly Business, I'm not a business guy. Business is not my forte. Yeah. I'm a creative type. So I have to really make sure I know my, you know, stuff when I talk to him. And then when he's BSing up there on the microphone, because he BSs plenty, I need to be ready to bounce back at that.
Yep.
And I have a show that I do once a month with Lash LaRue, which is called Time Limit Draw, where he's doing a live caricature while I'm interviewing him and fielding questions from the crowd. So our interview topic is about the person he's drawing. So I got to do my research on that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just, it's a wide, wide variety. And I think you really have to approach it individually per project.
Yeah. No, I'm working on a project with formerly known as Enzo Amore.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And he's a type.
He's a big Matt Hardy mark.
Yes. Very much so. But to get him to sit down he's all over.
I'm sure.
The character you see on TV is him in real life.
Oh, we told the good story on the WrestleMania 33 episode of the Hardy podcast. If anyone hasn't listened, where when they found out that the Hardys were the secret tag team at WrestleMania in their ladder match, and they were coming up with the spots, and they're like, Enzo, what do you want? How do you want to be like taken out of this?
Yep.
And he goes, I don't care. Murder me, bro. Murder me. Just bleeping murder me.
Yep.
And he's going to be great. That's awesome. Good for you.
Thanks. Yeah. He likes to say that his job is to sell. That's it. That's his, his thing. But for a lot of the people listening and watching right now, they like to know, or they want to know, what is the best way to break into podcasting? What would you suggest is the first step it's not just a wrestling podcast, but in general, where do I start?
Well, I first started back when I was in eighth grade doing live online sports talk radio. And the podcast medium didn't even exist back then. Everything was live and like you had to be there to listen. And I'm sure it was terrible content, but I was getting myself out there, right? Because everything in broadcasting is done through reps. The amount of reps that you get, the better you're going to get. So number one is just put yourself out there. And that can be a really hard thing for some people to do. But if you want to do this, you just have to. So that's number one. Number two, find a way to be different. And that is the single most difficult part of conceptualizing stuff. We have a project right now. We haven't even announced this yet. So I don't know how many details I can go into. But there was a promotion back in 2002 that was launched. And if you know what it is, then you know what it is. After the death of WCW, or it's 2001 rather, after WCW went out. And it had a very short run. It had like an infamous group of people involved. And it just was something that kind of came and went, but it has like a cult following. So recently we're coming up with concept ideas to utilize one of our talent who just happened to be involved with said organization. And I was like, this may be random, but like, did you ever hear of this promotion? And they're like, yeah, I remember that. I was like, why don't we take a limited series, like deep dive on the rise and fall and do a watch along of this super niche, but you know, very much cult like promotion that got attention. And they're like, oh my God, never thought about that. So now we're going to do that because it's something that's never been done before. Exactly. So that's just the big thing. You have to find a way to be different. And if you can be different, that's the biggest piece of advice that I can offer.
Yeah. I try to tell people like in the wrestling community circle that ask me these questions, and you know, it is very saturated to a point. And I feel like a lot of people, you know, they go into the interview part where they want to interview superstars and wrestlers. And, you know, every week you'll see like, oh, you know, so-and-so did 10 interviews because there's 10 wrestling podcasts that interview them. And they're typically the same questions. So a lot of it,
absolutely.
So a lot of it is, how do you break apart? How do you break away from that side and kind of go your own direction? So I understand what you're saying there.
Well, and like interviewing, and you're a very good interviewer, because what you're doing is,
appreciate
you're
that,
listening to my responses and you're asking questions off of my answers. You're asking follow-ups.
Yeah.
That is such a critical, if not the most critical part of interviewing.
Yeah.
And there are so many people that just don't do that. And you'll hear someone they're interviewing say something really interesting or something that could lead the door open to discuss something really different.
Yep.
And then they go back to their pre-prepared list of questions. And for most, if not almost all of my interviews, I never have a single pre-prepared question. I don't even know how an interview is going to start half the time. I get a vibe from our little pre-interview conversation, yep, and we go. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that honestly might be the biggest piece of advice out of this whole chat, because the biggest thing with being a podcast in general is being different. And I feel like even when I'm interviewed and people ask me questions, I'll say something that I'm like, oh, I know that could be something great to talk about. And then it's like, what's your favorite color?
Get to it.
What's your name? Exactly. So I completely understand, you know, what you're saying there. And also a large part of doing this is, I guess, in a sense, staying, you know, up to date with the current product and studying the past. How well do you do, like, how do you fluctuate, you know, that system where obviously talking to Matt Hardy, you do your own research for that. And, you know, he's been around for so many years. How do you,
going on 30 this year?
Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't know this, but we have a very, and I know he's not going to hear this, so I can say this. We have a very big surprise for his 30th wrestling anniversary.
Very nice.
Can't tell him yet, but it's going to be good. October. Stay tuned.
Very nice. Yeah, and just, you know, back to what I was saying with that.
Yeah, sorry, that's the ADD.
No, yeah. Yeah, it's for the average wrestling fan, I think it's hard to watch all the products weekly in general.
Yeah.
So many.
Yeah. It is. I mean, there's so much content out there, right?
Yeah.
I think for me, I consume wrestling a little different than I think most people do.
Yeah.
And I think some of this has to do from working on the indies and like helping lay out matches and like getting an intense understanding of the chemical makeup of a wrestling match, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I watch wrestling like how a pitching coach would watch a pitcher, and they would break down the little elements of their game. That's how I consume pro wrestling. Yep. So if I'm watching a lockup at the start of a match and they go into a side headlock takeover, but for some reason, instead of going through your traditional starter match, maybe they immediately go into a wrestle and do something different. I'm wondering to myself, okay, why did that make sense? Why did it make sense to do that? What was the reason for that? And I break it down at a very micro level. Yep. And I understand that most people have no desire to watch wrestling that way, and I don't blame them in the slightest. Yep. It's like sickening sometimes, but that's just how I consume it. And then the storyteller in me, from being a journalist who, you know, made tons of long form features over the years, I get really ingrained in the, okay, how did this character get developed over a period of time in the course of this match, whatever it may be. And it just makes it really difficult sometimes to try to consume all of that. But yeah. I think at the end of the day, my point here that I'm making, Joey, is that consume what you want to consume. And if there is something that you don't want to consume, you don't have to. And you don't have to comment on it.
Yep.
You know, some people be like, well, you don't like this, so why do you watch it? Well, it's kind of part of my job to pay attention to it. And even if I don't think it's good, I'm going to give my perspective on, okay, here's how I feel I can contribute to this discourse and offer up something. And I might be wrong, but I'm going to try to be constructive. That's not always the case. And when I say not always the case, almost never the case in the public discourse. So,
yeah, it's always this or that. It's not.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
I watch so many different promotions.
Yep.
Promotions you've never heard of. And that's awesome because they all offer something different.
Yep.
And if AEW is your jam, awesome. If WWE is your jam, power to you, whatever it may be.
Yep.
It doesn't mean that you have to bring another down in the process.
It's funny that you mentioned that that's, you know, the way you look at pro wrestling, because I do the exact same thing. People tell me all the time that, like, I'm the worst person to watch wrestling with, because knowing each person's style, you know, being aware of their style in the ring, you can kind of predict what they're going to do in a match. And sometimes I voice that out loud and people are like, how do you know that? No, don't say it. Don't talk. So I get, you know, what you're saying. Micro looking at everything and really diving deep into that to see what's going to happen next or what can come from that. Because honestly, for me, that's the most interesting thing. Like, I like to see, oh, this can go here, this can go there, and just kind of creating it in your own head in a sense and then watching it play out. So I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, let it play out. You can pick up that Matt Hardy podcast shirt at the
boxinggimmicks.com,
the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy store. I mean, I'm with you entirely. And like, I remember being in production meetings when I was at MLB Network, and I'd be in there with like Pedro Martinez, and he would be breaking down the difference between throwing a fastball here and throwing a fastball here. And just that subtle little difference.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh man, that is so cool. And that is how I watch pro wrestling.
Yeah. You originated from your podcast, Living the Gimmick. I kind of touched on it before. Kind of a wrestling podcast before wrestling podcasts were such a huge thing.
Before everyone had one.
Before everyone had one. Exactly. That's the best way to put it.
Yeah.
What was your original goal with, you know, doing that show? Was it, in a sense, you know, to break into pro wrestling or to, you know, go the broadcasting route for pro wrestling? What was your mindset around that?
So I had been working on a wrestling website. I helped launch a few years prior to that with a good team of people. And my main coworker that I really became close with was Doug McDonald, who co-hosts Up for Debate with me on ad-free shows.
Yeah.
And we were just like, man, we can't, when we sold our stock in the website, we're like, we can't stop. Like, we're producing good content. We get along so well. And I think our perspective on wrestling is a little different than what some other people are putting out there. And the way we present it is a very entertaining way. I think our spin on wrestling was a very fun way to digest wrestling talk. And, you know, a lot of people can just turn on a microphone and say, I thought this about this on Raw. But I felt like the way that we went about discussing things with a very lighthearted nature was just a little different than the way that pro wrestling was typically put out there in the podcast discourse when we launched. And we did 300 episodes on the dot, and it was a lot of fun. And I'm very grateful. And without that, I would not have, you know, paved that path to do what I'm doing right now. So it was a total blast. And I'm glad that I get to do Up for Debate with Doug, which is basically our Pardon the Interruption style wrestling show that puts famous things of the past up against one another. And we debated. So it's perfect in that sense for us.
Yeah. And you've kind of transitioned over, you know, being on the side, watching it, talking about it. Now sort of being a manager, well, you are, you know, being a manager in pro wrestling with Limitless Wrestling and, you know, kind of going around the independent scene, doing that. What was it like to kind of break into that? And was that ever, you know, part of the deal for you, like to break into being like on camera, sort of say?
Yeah, it's fun. A lot of people don't know this about me, but I've been working on the indies for close to 7 years now.
Wow.
I think some people think that was something I kind of started doing more recently, but I've been doing it for a long time. I played music in a bunch of different bands, kind of my late teenage years into my early college years. And performing was always just something I loved to do. So when I stopped performing on a more full-time basis, I was like, I need something that's going to give me that high. And I'd always wanted to do it. And I got involved with a local promotion when I was up in Maine. that was called IWE, which Sasha Banks was the first women's champion for when she was first starting her career, performing in front of 50 people. That was my first promotion too. And it stemmed from doing an interview with Billy Gunn where he looked at me and said, you know, you have a very punchable face. I was like, no, okay. He said, no, man, that's your meal ticket. People will pay to see you get your face punched. I was like, huh, how about that? That's kind of twisted and messed up, but all right. And it just kind of spiraled from there. You know, Limitless, I found a really, that's like my home promotion, I feel like, in the Portland area there. And I'm heavily involved with that, but I've worked with other promotions around the country. Right now, I'm doing some work with the world famous Monster Factory, and I'm going to be doing some coaching there, the same place that produced Riddle and Damian Priest and Sheamus. So, and Sloan Jacobs on NXT right now. So, it's been cool, man. It's really been a lot of fun. And what that allowed for me to do, and I'm probably going to be scaling back on a lot of that in the near future, but what that allowed me to do was to more intensely understand pro wrestling at that micro level, because you're learning how matches are put together. You're learning how stories are told. And it introduced me to so many great talent. You know, I feel like I was kind of one of the first media figures to be like, hey, you guys need to be checking out Daniel Garcia, because I knew how good he was. And I was seeing his rise in person. I'm like, this guy's going to be it. Kind of the same for Carmelo Hayes and a few others. So if I can help my peers get out there, that's all the better, right?
Yeah. And it also helps you develop your, you know, when you're doing the different podcasts, different shows.
It makes me a better podcaster by tenfold.
Yep. And like we've been talking about, you've been able to do so many different things in pro wrestling, you know, even being in the rings. Has there been a career highlight for you where you kind of reflect on it and you're like, that was it. That's the moment that, you know, it all makes sense for you in a way.
In wrestling or in my entirety of my career?
I guess entirely in your whole career. Yeah.
I can give you the full circle moment. Yeah. That was my first professional interview. My first professional athlete that I interviewed was Jeff Bennett, who was some middle reliever for the Atlanta Braves. I went down to spring training in 2008 at Disney just for the fun of it. And I was 14, 15, 16, something like that. I don't know. I don't even know how old I am. It's fun. but I brought a tape recorder and I was like, you know what? I was running like a sports blog. I'm like, I'm just going to go down while they're like warming up and I'm just going to bring in and see if anyone will talk to me.
Yeah.
And I called him over and he answered some questions. And that was at the Disney's Wide World of Sports Complex. And then when I was in Orlando working, I got to cover the Braves' last game there. And I did a stand-up in TV is when you're on camera and you see the person talking in their story. I did a stand up in the exact spot that I had interviewed Jeff Bennett 11, 12 years prior to that.
Yeah.
In this last game for the Braves at that facility. And I was like, all right, that was pretty cool.
Wow.
That was a full circle moment for me. For sure.
You can't even write that.
It was pretty. I tweet this all the time. Like, that's going in the book one day. That's going in the book one day.
Wow. For sure. That's incredible. Yeah. I can see it too. It's just one of those things that you get chills just hearing stories like that.
Yeah.
It's like I said, you can't write it.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah. And in pro wrestling, what to you, you know, knowing all the parts of it now, what is your favorite part about pro wrestling? What do you enjoy most about it?
Like podcasting or pro wrestling in general?
Pro wrestling in general.
Pro wrestling in general. I mean, I think it's the storytelling. Like, that is why we flock to different forms of media, right? Without us even realizing it sometimes, because we love being told stories.
Yeah.
So whether that's through the physical nature of it, whether it's through the storyline nature of it.
Yeah.
I think it's the storytelling for sure.
That to me, honestly, is the best part too, because Like, I like to tell people all the time that, you know, pro wrestling is, you take your favorite sports, and you take the NFL and baseball and whatever it may be, and you take your favorite movie and your favorite superheroes, you combine them together, you kind of get pro wrestling out of that. And it's just one of those enjoyable things where you get every aspect of like the fun parts of, you know, life, sports, acting, drama, entertainment.
And the thing too, Joey, is that my ideology, and I know people certainly disagree with this, is that pro wrestling can be anything. It really can. Yeah. And I was driving with, actually a couple of weeks ago, I was driving with Gangrel, and we were having this conversation because we were actually talking about Jim Cornette. and he was like, you know, I know he's full of crap sometimes, but like, I get where he's coming from. Like, a lot of times these guys just go out there and they just act all silly. And I'm like, you know, though, as long as they're not doing anything offensive, there's someone out there that I promise you is having a good time watching that. And maybe it's not everybody.
Yeah.
But someone out there is enjoying it. And power to them. Matt Hardy has had the most insane matches of most people's careers. Like, if they've done an extreme rules match or a TLC match or hardcore match, there's like a good 55 to 70% chance that Matt Hardy was in it.
Yep.
But he's also done the Final Deletion and Tag Team Apocalypto, which had random tag teams like the Rock and Roll Express fighting on lighting rigs.
Yeah.
And then falling in, having a pinfall broken up by a boat. Pro wrestling can be anything.
Yep.
As long as people are passionate about it.
That's the biggest thing. I think it's the passion. And it's the passion, you know, that make the people complain. It's the passion that makes everybody enjoy it. So at the end of the day, you know, whatever it may be, your feelings on it, it all comes from, you know, the passion, you know, being a pro wrestling fan. But, you know, speaking of Matt Hardy, speaking of the Hardys, we saw this week Jeff Hardy one-on-one with Darby Allin for the first time in AEW on Dynamite. You know, being that you are close to the Hardys, what was it like to see that all take place and those spots in that match that made me cringe a little bit? I mean, it was a little intense.
So I was with Matt and Jeff earlier in the day, and because they were on Long Island, so I drove up there to tape with Matt. And I go to Jeff, I was like, oh man, you got a fun one tonight, huh? And, you know, Jeff is just such a, he's a rock star, right? Like, that's Jeff Hardy. He's a rock star. That whole charismatic enigma thing, like, that's real life. You talk about living the gimmick. That is, yeah, Jeff Hardy.
Yep.
And he's like, yeah, man, it should be fun. I'm like, I mean, fun's not the word. I'm not going to use that word. It's going to be insane is what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And it's cool because I first worked with Darby Allin, I think back in like 2017. And after I saw him work for the first time, I was like, man, you're Jeff Hardy. Yeah. Like, you are Jeff Hardy. And he's like, I appreciate that. So I know that match meant a lot to Darby last night. And holy moly.
Yeah. A little more than what I thought it would be.
I posted the screenshot to Twitter, but I texted Matt in all caps after the Darby dive off the ladder. I don't know what your swearing policy is, but you know.
No, you're fine. It's free range, man. Go for it.
Yeah, I said in all caps, what the fuck? And a couple hours went by and he just texts me back. He just goes, stunt men doing a stunt show. I said, you're not kidding, brother.
Yeah.
And it was a spectacle. I hope both of them are okay. At last check, Jeff was feeling banged up, but he was largely okay. So,
yeah, he got up right after, went to the turbuckle and was just celebrating. Was
doing his clapping. Yeah,
like nothing had happened.
Jeff's a rock star, man. He really is. He is. Yeah, Matt would always say that. And then it really took for me to like meet Jeff and get to know Jeff a little bit to be like, yeah, you know what? That's Jeff Hardy through and through.
It's sometimes intense to watch, but like you said, it's a spectacle. It's part of the process, and I freaking love it. I love watching it.
Isn't it amazing how similar but different the Hardy Boys are?
Yeah, I always love, and I love that you do that on your show too, because Matt is really, like, I know you say Matt is the secret sauce.
Secret sauce, that's the term.
To that group. And he really is, because, you know, Jeff, although he's, you know, the front man, sort of say, where he's, you know, getting, you know, all this stuff. And Matt's in the background doing it all too. And he's really, I mean, the way he's been able to diversify himself, you know, Matt Hardy version one, V1, and then go to the extreme, and then, you know, the final deletion, and all these things he's been able to, in a sense, get over. There's no one that has really been able to, one, have the longevity, but be able, but also to be able to do that and have a crowd in the palm of their hand. So there's really no one. There's no one like them.
They're just, they're so different, but they're so similar in other ways. And I know how, when I see them together, Matt is telegraphing and trying to get an idea of what Jeff is going to say, but he never truly knows.
Yeah.
And I was filming a promo for them a few weeks ago, and they were talking about they were becoming the goats of tag team wrestling. And he like serves up a line for Jeff, and Jeff just goes like, "We're gonna be the best." And Matt looks at him and he's like, "The fuck?" And then afterwards he's like, "Oh, because he's trying to be a goat." He's like, "I had no idea what was gonna come out of his mouth."
That's priceless.
I have no idea, but that's Jeff Hart, and that's just what makes him so special.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been such a treat.
Yeah,
to really watch that for sure.
John, it's been, you know, an honor and a pleasure to sit here and talk with you so much about, you know, your career, different things going on. Where can all the fans listening and watching go follow you, go watch more of you and all the things that you're doing?
I really appreciate your time, Joey. This was a lot of fun. I do a lot of these interviews, and most of the time they're not as engaging as one like this. So I appreciate your preparation and the work you put into that. And I highly encourage anyone listening to continue to throw your support towards Joey. Yeah, you can check out, I don't know, just Google my name, J-O-N-A-L-B-A, lose the H, yeah. H's are for losers. And yeah, man, it's anywhere you get your podcast, The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy, The Wives of Wrestling, adfreeshows.com. There's so much content. And now I'm getting to do with my life what I've always wanted to do, and that's long form interviewing is all I've ever wanted to do, and now I get to do that multiple times a week, sometimes multiple times a day. So go check it out, and I hope that you guys enjoy the content as much as I enjoy laying it down. And I think if you listen to one episode of anything that I do, especially the Hardy Show, I think you can hear how much I enjoy doing what I do. So go check it out and hit that subscribe. And as Matt would say, the cinco stars.
Again, John, it's been honestly a pleasure to chat with you and learn from you too here. I think, you know, the knowledge that that you were able to give here can help other people listening, you know, to follow their dreams and to go ahead and give it a shot, whatever that may be, and just, you know, attempt to try something new. And again, just thanks for taking the time, and hopefully down the road we can do this again.
No doubt about it. Anytime, any place, you let me know. And good luck with trying to get Enzo to do something there, because that'll be some must-listen stuff.
Yeah. Appreciate it, man. And before you go, please like, subscribe, and check out more wrestling content right here on The Angle Podcast.